Welcome to the Wackle Gather podcast. My name is Judy Mitchum. Wackle is an organization for top female leaders in marketing, media, and communications. In this podcast series, I will be talking to some top female leaders, women who are also known to be change makers. This podcast is being released in advance of the Wackle Gather event on the 23rd of May. It is sponsored by Whaler, the most creative influencer marketing company. My guest today is Jackie Stevenson. Jackie is the founding partner and global managing director of the Brooklyn Brothers, a cutting-edge global agency. Jackie worked her way up the ladder in some of London's top agencies like Ogilvy and Craig Jones before founding her own agency with three colleagues. She now divides her time between London and New York. Jackie is a champion in many ways, not just in business, but also on the ballroom floor. She is a pro-am world champion, more of that later. Contagiously positive, highly intelligent, and totally genuine, she has the natural ability to light up a room wherever she goes. Hello to Jackie.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
Oh, well, I must say it's very exciting to be here in the heart of Soho, surrounded by the coolest shops, skateboarding shops and, you know, trainer places. I'm feeling very out of touch.
Yeah, I came in on my skateboard this morning.
Well, actually, sadly, Jackie's not dressed in her sequined ballroom gown today. She is actually looking very cool in her black polo neck. So that sets the scene at least. Now, let's start, Jackie, by taking you back to your early years. And you grew up in Little Whitley. Tell us about that.
Gosh, yes, Little Whitley. It took me quite a time actually to get to Little Whitley because we had quite a nomadic lifestyle. My dad was a serial entrepreneur from an early age, in the sense that he started as a management consultant and then quickly realised that he could sit atop businesses and turn them around. So if you can believe it, we actually moved house five times in my first 11 years. And you know, we went from Southend. I'm actually an Essex girl. That's where I was born. Yeah, loud and proud. But we were there for about a year, and then we went up to Leeds, then we went to Nottingham, then we came back to Essex again, then we finally kind of started to make our way up to Worcester. And it was only really when I was 12 that we settled in a village called Little Whitley. But it was interesting because I think it was a really formative part of my early years that I think it's very difficult when you're pulled out of different places and plopped into them to make friends.
Yes.
And to really feel like you're part of something, because every time I got to a new school, everyone had already got their friend groups. And I don't know whether you remember as girls, you're always in twos.
Yeah.
You were never in threes.
Yeah.
I think I learned at an early age to become quite a people pleaser, and going into these situations just to be liked really, and to try and get into a friend group. And then when we finally settled in Little Whitley, I was a year into my secondary school, so of course the whole thing started again. But I was super lucky. I managed to get into a grammar school, and so had a great education, but probably my school years weren't my happiest years.
Yeah.
Definitely what I was doing outside with my family, and also I was lucky enough because we had a bit of land out the back. I had a pony, and so I used to spend hours and hours riding on my pony.
Well, from Little Whitley to New York, I think this is quite a charming story. Do you think you got your entrepreneurial spirit from your father then?
Oh, I definitely did. My dad taught me so many things. We always used to sit down at dinner and always have conversations about things broader than what was happening in Little Whitley. And I think one of the things that he taught me really early on was budget management.
Right.
I mean, it sounds like the most driest subject, but he used to make me do my own personal expenses spreadsheet when I was at university. and I used to have to come back and present it
to my father
and talk about my ingoings and my outcomings and exactly what I needed from him for the next term.
What great training to be a businesswoman.
But it taught me to be quite entrepreneurial, because my friends were like, he pays you for books, why don't we compile all our receipts and he can pay for that, and then we can have a big night out at the end of it. So yeah, we did that one term. I felt a little bit bad about that, but entrepreneurial nonetheless.
Oh, fantastic. You got into Oxford but didn't go, is that right?
Well, kind of. I think it was really at that time as I was growing up, really in my late teens, that I began to realise it was really important to listen to my gut and listen to what I wanted. And so the school that I was at, if you could fill out the paper and you could talk fairly fluently, you got an interview at Oxford. And I was being interviewed at Oxford, and I was at Keble, I was talking about the six narrative strands of Chaucer and right. How there were six Chaucer narrators. And I hadn't got a clue. I couldn't remember what I'd written in this paper at all. And I was really struggling to remember what the flipping fifth Chaucer was. just not enjoying it at all. Yes. Very, very academic. And they came back to me and they said they liked me. But they said that they'd like me to defer a year and that I'd need to go through the interview process again. And I'd gone down to Exeter and had an interview, and it wasn't like that at all. They talked about love and how different authors had different impressions of love. And they talked about the drama school that they had there, that if you were an English student, you could also do some work with. And I thought, this is more me.
Yeah.
I can't remember how many bloody narratives there are in Chaucer and six Chaucers and the rest of it. And I'm going to struggle. So let's not put myself through that. Let's not try again and do the interview again. Let's just go with my heart and go for Exeter. And that's what I did. And I had...
An English graduate, of course.
English graduate, absolutely.
Like me.
There's a lot of us.
And we're some of the few people in the industry that can actually spell and do grammar, I've noticed.
Well, I mean, again, my spelling is pretty atrocious, thank goodness for spell check. But I met some of my closest friends who I've stuck with through years and years, and I just learned so much and I enjoyed it. And I think that was something that I learned early on, really. Trust your gut, trust your heart, do what you think feels right, not what other people think is the right thing
yes.
to do.
Yes, you talked about your childhood of moving around, and I'm pretty sure that would have given you that experience of change, which has stayed with you, because you know you now run an agency which is always at the forefront of change. In fact, I remember coming here for a Twitter training session in 2007, and the rest is history. I now have 25 followers or something. But you've always been at the forefront of change, and you're obviously pretty comfortable with it.
I really enjoy change. I really do. I think it's one of the things that my work husband, George Bryant, and I have always kind of enjoyed doing together, because we're always looking at what the next chapter is going to be, the next 3 years, the next 5 years. I mean, good grief, you can never plan, but you can think about what it is that you want to be doing and where the next wave of change might be. And it's something that we've always felt really comfy with. I think right from my early years, you know, people often talk about how difficult it is to go into a room and meet people. I mean, I was doing that from the age of six. And I think, you know, that's something that I actually really enjoy,
yeah.
going in there and saying, right, okay, you know, who are these new people that I'm going to meet and how can we help each other? And I think really having that thought about change and how you're going to meet people and be able to really drive new things forward is something that's right at the heart of the Brooklyn Brothers.
Well, if I may say, at the beginning, I said you were very good at lighting up a room, but you also have the ability to light up a conference call, because we've been on numerous conference calls together recently, and you've just got that amazingly contagiously positive spirit, very much a people person.
Oh,
so
thank
that
you.
Obviously started very young.
Yeah, I think so. And I think, you know, I really enjoy being around people. I'm a very social person. And I think that setting up the agency as we did back in, over 10 years ago now, now. It's given me the opportunity to get into so many other areas and meet so many interesting people that we've brought into the centre of the agency and collaborated with.
How would you describe your management style then? You're obviously not the old-fashioned alpha female kind of type.
No, not at all. I think it was something we were talking about earlier. I think I've been extraordinarily lucky in my career to have a lot of really brilliant female role models. It's not that I didn't have tough times when I was coming up through the industry. I did. But there was always a kind and wise listening female ear who could always help guide me. You know, people like Alison Bain and Miranda Arnold at Ogilvy, really Sybilla Dinn when I went to CDP, and when I first joined Wackel, Catherine Jacob, who just was such a mentor to me in the early years. I've just been so lucky, and I think really I've learned so much from those women, which is to bring your authentic self to work, to help guide, but to be there when you're needed,
yeah.
And to give anyone that you're managing, whether it's men or women, space.
Yeah.
And I think that when you run your own business, you have the ability to allow people to stretch themselves that little bit further and fail, and it's okay, because you can always make things right. And it's only when you stretch yourself and you fail that you learn, and you can pivot yourself forward so much quicker. So I think that's something that, you know, I've learned from those women in my life, that to be there but to just give space.
So talking of stretching yourself, you are a fantastic example of someone who has developed an extracurricular interest, which has grown, you know, enabled you to grow and flourish, which is ballroom dancing. What age did you get into ballroom dancing and why?
Oh my goodness me. Ballroom dancing. I've been doing ballroom dancing now for, about 6 years. And I mean, like everyone, I did a little bit of ballet when I was younger. I mean,
yeah.
but nothing to write home about. You know, my friends who are professional ballerinas would laugh at what I did.
So just for the listeners, I can guess that was when you were in your 40s. So it's not like you started when you were 16.
My
you
goodness,
started
no.
I started
ballroom dancing in my 40s, in my early 40s.
Which is quite a brave thing to do.
And it's all down to my business partner's wife. Honestly, as I said, I came over to New York. I was working in the agency, obviously knew my partner as well, but didn't really know anyone else outside. Knew I was going to be doing a stint there. And Paul Parton, his wife, Amanda Parton, who actually was a copywriter at Ogilvy, had left the industry and decided to set up her own dance school. And she was brilliant at jazz, contemporary. But she was like, Jax, we've got a project. We're going to do this thing together. We're going to learn ballroom dancing together. I've found you a dance partner. You're going to dance with Little Igor. I'm going to dance with Big Igor. And we're going to do this thing called Pro-Am. I was like, okay, I'm game. I'm up for it. Let's give it a go. And Pro-Am is massive in America and in Russia too. It's basically where an amateur dancer gets to partner a professional dancer. And there are competitions literally every weekend in the States, going up through to nationals, right up through to internationals and the world championships. And off we went. Big Eagle got injured fairly early on, unfortunately. And so Amanda and I both ended up dancing with Little Eagle, which really does him down, because he is a Ukrainian vice youth champion who'd come over to America to start his career as a professional dancer, and took the two of us on, and we just loved it. I think we kind of egged each other on a little bit. We trained hard in Manhattan Ballroom, and then we started our competitions, and I felt that, you know, for the first time I was actually doing something that outside of work took me completely outside of work.
Yes.
I think it's so important to your mind and to your body to just refresh yourself. It makes you better in work. And I think, you know, George and I in our early years were 24/7 at the Brooklyn Brothers. Yeah. I mean, we were working so hard. And I think both of us recognised that it was important to take ourselves out of the business and do something that stretched us in different ways to bring that back. And oh my goodness, ballroom dancing does, because mentally you have to remember the steps and mentally you have to try and get different parts of your body to do different things at different times. And physically, it's exhausting.
You also talked about having to learn to fail in the early stages when you were a beginner. Presumably there was quite a lot of that learning and failing and trying again.
There was huge amounts of failure. And I think that one of the things that you have to do with ballroom dancing is you have to push yourself and you have to do things that are way out of your comfort zone and that you feel an absolute idiot doing. But you just have to do it. And actually, I've learned that when I'm the tiredest and I'm feeling like a complete numpty, I can't get it, that's when the muscle begins to respond and that's when you begin to learn. And so you just have to push on through. And when you push on through, suddenly a few weeks later, your body responds and goes, oh, I remember this bit. That was like that. And you're like, whoa, where did that come from? So it's so important. And boy, there still are many, many failures. But I was so lucky because Igor was amazing. It was brilliant times dancing with Amanda. Amanda was a dancer anyway, so kind of shot up through the ranks quite quickly. And I stuck away with bronze for a year. And then when I came back to the UK, found through Igor, Craig, who I wasn't sure who he was, and I had to go all the way down to Cheam to dance with him. And I found out that he was a semi-finalist and vice champion in the UK. Amazing dancer, Craig Shaw. And he literally took me under his wing when I was in the UK and just rocketed me up through the ranks. So,
and now you are world champion.
Well, in two years, he got me to bronze world champion and silver world champion. And so now I'm up in the heady heights of gold, which is where everyone sits now. You can't go any higher than that. So it's super competitive. And I've literally just got my toe in the water. Got my spangles on and trying to give those girls a run for her money. But
I mean, people listening will probably know what it's like to win a pitch or to score a goal, possibly. But what's it like when you're awarded a trophy? What's that feeling that you get?
It's incredible nervousness because you are standing there with your partner and they call out your placing in reverse order. So you've done incredibly well to get to the finals anyway, because often we battle it out through rounds, into quarters, into semis, right into the finals. And then you're standing there and you're thinking, oh God, don't make me last. Oh, thank goodness somebody else is last. Okay, I can do sixth. And all the way you're going sixth, fifth, fourth. And then you get down to the final two. And by that point, you're like, I'll take second. So when they finally call out your name, it's the most amazing feeling. But I've developed this thing of opening my mouth really wide, like some kind of silent scream, which is great in the moment, but looks awful in pictures. So I need to stop that.
But one of the things you said earlier is that this amazing ballroom dancing that you do stimulates you and makes you a better person at work. And I think this is a really interesting theme, because a lot of people in the old days would have said someone going off doing, you know, a big extracurricular project would be, you know, a distraction from work, but you would think the opposite.
I think that's totally true. I think our industry is relentless. I mean, change is exciting, but it can also be exhausting. I think we push ourselves incredibly hard for ourselves, for our businesses, for our clients. And I think it's a business that grabs your passion. So you're all in. You're not just dialing it in. You're not doing a 9-to-5. And I think what's so important to keep your thinking fresh and your mind sharp is to get out of the business and stretch your brain in a different way.
Yes.
And also come at problems that you have in work in different ways as well. I think one of the things I've learned so much with ballroom dancing is how important partnering is. And, you know, when you are locked together, because it's international standard, I do, you know, now there's Latin bikini sparkly stuff for me. It's long dresses and swooping around the floor in the waltz.
Wonderful.
So you're stuck together side to side. And if you make a wrong move, it's going to affect what your partner does. And you have to train together. You know, you're in that ballroom 8-10 hours a week training. So you've got to be a good partner. And I think that so often our business is sometimes misrepresented by egos.
Yes.
And actually partnering and being a good team member is so important.
Very important.
And I see that so much in dancing, because it's the couple that people mark. It's the way that you respond to the music and the floor together. And that's so similar in our business.
Yes, that teams work.
Teams work, definitely. And
it's,
I think,
teams that win. Yeah.
We touched on it before, but that importance of failing. I think we put ourselves under huge pressure to be right first time. We've got to win every pitch. We've got to get every idea bang on, spot on, and that's not life. And you don't get good at something if you don't fail and you don't push yourself to fail. So I think learning how to build failure into the process to get to better is really, really important, and it's something that it's taught, the ballroom dancing has taught me so much.
And that's a very encouraging message, actually, because, you know, it strips away the perception of invincibility that people imagine top women to have. Most top women that I've interviewed in this podcast series have had failures to get to the top. So how refreshing. And I know that you're off to Blackpool soon. So not today, obviously, but in the next few weeks. So really good luck with that.
Thank you.
But of course, as well as ballroom dancing and running a top agency, you are also on the Wackle Gather Committee. Which is where we have done our concours together. And you are in charge of the speaker lineup. And we talked about your amazing ability to know everyone and be a people person. And you seem to know everyone. So how are the speakers looking for Wackle Gather on the 23rd?
Really good, really good. We've got an incredible, amazing lineup of fantastic women and men, actually, to speak to us this year. You're stretching from a range of different backgrounds and different industries. They're looking really, really good, really good.
And what do you think is the value of Wackle Gather to organisations that haven't yet sent women to this amazing event? What would you describe as the value of it?
It's so interesting, because I've been lucky enough to sit on the Future Leaders Committee for the last couple of years. And one of the things that comes out every time from these amazing, incredible, fearsome young women. I mean, some of these women are just doing so much in their home lives, in their work lives, is that they lack confidence to actually stand up and say what it is that they want to say, particularly in a big room as they're coming up through their careers, you know, holding a room, being able to talk to people. And Gather is one of the most inspiring, confidence-making conferences I have ever been to. I wouldn't even call it a conference. It's just like a massive, great big
celebration,
fabulous celebration get together. And women come from all backgrounds, all ages, all different industries, just to share their stories and to be inspired by incredible speakers. And I think you come away from Gather feeling supported, feeling confident that there's pretty much no situation you've faced that somebody else, either in that auditorium or on that stage, hasn't faced, and just the feeling that you can do it.
Yeah.
And I think that it's so inspiring, and I think that any woman at any stage of her career gets something out of getting out of Gather. And, you know, so many of us Wacklers go to Gather and just enjoy being part of everyone who's been who's there in the conference hall, and just really getting a lot from the speakers.
So do you feel optimistic about the future for women?
Oh, hugely optimistic, hugely optimistic. I think that old structures and the old way of doing things are all breaking down. Yeah. At the moment. I mean, you see it in politics, you see it in business, you know, you're seeing it in nature. And I think that the female spirit and the way that women do things is really needed today in the world. Mm. And I think that it's a balance. Mm. You know, we need to be able to come together with our male counterparts with a focus and be able able to kind of rise up,
yes,
and really challenge some of the old ways of thinking.
Yes.
And I think there are some brilliant, brilliant men who really understand this and have been pioneering this for years. Yes. I mean, I would count both my current business partners, George Bryant and Paul Parton, in that. They've always been so supportive, and together, you know, we really are creating, we think, something special at the Brooklyn Brothers. And I see that in industries, you know, everywhere. And I hope soon,
yeah,
in politics. I really do. I think that, you know, female and male together, both sets of unique sets of skills is what's going to take us forward.
Yes, and seeing men as our allies who are
completely
also on the mission to help us. Very exciting times for women. Well, on that note, I want to thank Jackie Stevenson from the Brooklyn Brothers. I'd like to thank Mediacom and the team for the technical side of putting these podcasts together, the team at the GDST, and to remind everyone that Wackle Gather is on the 23rd of May 2019, and we look forward to seeing you there. Goodbye.
Thanks so much.